What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
The show is Law and Disorder. I'm Brian Edwards Tiegert, sitting in for Kat Brooks, who will be back in this time slot starting Monday. We're going to move on to news that came out of the Newsom administration, which just announced the next California prison that will be shutting its doors for lack of people to lock up. This is the California Rehabilitation Center in the city of Norco in Riverside County. Estimated upon its closure to save the state about $150 million. Joining us to talk about this is Amber Rose Howard, Executive Director of the California United for a Responsible Budget. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've been an adult for just long enough that I'm still kind of astonished California has a dropping prison population and is actually shuttering prisons. How did we get here?
You know, it really is incredible and amazing. But we got here because, first of all, California was just incarcerating too many people and the prison system was out of control. We had a bunch of prisons that were built in the prison boom and they were all dilapidated and falling apart. And so the budget to reconstruct these prisons to keep them going was so costly. And on top of that, Californians fought to change criminal justice laws. And so people were coming out of prison. We had a huge prison population decline and, of course, some tweaks from the state. And so we got to a place where it's like, hey, we've got some empty prison beds here. That's how we got here to close in five prisons in 2025.
I mean, just 10 years ago, like the prison guards union seemed like this unstoppable force in state politics. They were going to push not just to get new prisons built, old prisons expanded, but sentencing laws harshened so as to keep those prisons full. Like, has their power waned in Sacramento?
You know, I think so. I think it's truly, I'd actually give more credit just to say that the base building and the power of the people has grown so much over time. I think that now we're a tough opponent. Formerly incarcerated folks and folks who are most impacted by incarceration have over the past 10 to 15 years been showing up in political spaces, speaking out on budget projects and letting folks know, hey, we're participating here. We have something to say. And so I think it's the power of the people that's actually grown and been able to meet the challenges in the same way that guards unions do. And so since the people have been speaking out, that's what's really shifted, I think, more than anything.
So one concern that's come up with these prison closures is you still have a building that was built to lock people up. It can be repurposed to lock people up under the auspices of a different entity. For instance, Immigration and Customs Enforcement or one of its private subcontractors like Geo Group. Tell us about your work trying to keep shuttered California prisons from becoming immigration detention centers.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's a huge concern. We see it every time. When they build them, they fill them. And if they remain open, they will fill them again. And so CURB's been working in budget advocacy. It's one of our ways of kind of fighting for California to reduce its carceral capacity. And so we got in the budget passed this year, AB 132, that says, hey, California can no longer or cannot use any of its empty prisons for any ICE or federal detention as long as they market for that, as long as the CDCR says that it's excess capacity. And so when that happens, that means they can also no longer use it for anything carceral. It's taken a long time to get to that point, I think, because, of course, California has federal prisons here. We've had private contracts before. So this is a huge step in the right direction to say we don't want as huge a carceral footprint as we've had in the past. We don't want ICE affiliation here. We've seen the terror in Los Angeles and other areas around the state. It was a big step in the right direction for the state to say, you know what, let's give some protections to Californians.
So what winds up happening to the prisons that have closed in California?
And that's the next thing. That's the great question, right? So, you know, there hasn't been any plans submitted or shared by CDC or the legislature on what to do with closed prisons. CURB and other organizations are thinking about that. And we followed the example of spaces like, you know, New York and some other states that have thought about what to do with prisons in Detroit. These folks thought, hey, let's make sure that the communities where prisons were can thrive in healthy and clean ways, but also let's set up some public safety models in these spaces that actually support folks who've suffered from these systems. And so we are submitting ideas and roadmaps to the state on what to do and how to repurpose these spaces. They've got to include people who are directly impacted. They've got to include, you know, economic solutions for the town and for the folks who used to work at the prison. And we want to make sure that that happens in the cleanest way. And so I think the state doesn't have ideas yet, but we've got them and we're happy to work with the state to move them forward.
This has always struck me as a peril of approaching the question of decarceration narrowly as a budget question. Because if part of your program is returning to society a large number of people who have been traumatized by incarceration, doing right by them and making that process go smoothly might actually take a lot of resources, probably should take a lot of resources. And it's hard to pitch that in the same breath as telling a lawmaker it's a money-saving move to shut these prisons.
You know, I think you're right about that. But I think that, you know, first of all, it is a money-saving move, but I think that people have to look at it as a public health and a public safety issue at large. The budget is impacted, but when we look at what's happening, people often rely on systems like prisons to answer crisis. When people are in crisis, that's when people are suffering. And so when we think about the money piece of this situation, it's like we want to put that money in community spaces that bring people out of crisis so that we're able to develop healthier communities that don't need to rely on these structures. And we know that that's what keeps communities safe. And we know that we can build safe economies on that, on those philosophies and a better budget around those ideas. Now, I think that, you know, it's a moral issue more than anything, but we know that dollars speak, right? Budgets shape our values. And so when we have a situation where prisons are closing, we're able to see money shifted and money spent differently. It makes a big difference in safety and in public health.
What about economic dislocation? Some of the like small towns with big prisons in the Central Valley, the prison is the main employer.
Sure. You know, I think about that and I think about where, you know, prison repurposing in other states and examples that have that we've seen in other states where folks have built community centers, folks have built movie theaters, folks have built healing centers, folks have built museums in place of these prisons where the community has still been able to thrive economically. It still brings folks to the town and it's just a better, cleaner job for everyone around, right? And so I think that there is clearly some economic displacement for folks. I think that folks definitely will be impacted and you know, to be frank with you, that's just what needs to happen in order to make a better world. We had the same issue, right, when we were talking about the abolition of slavery in this country and how folks in the South who thrived off of the slave economy needed slavery to still exist. And there was some economic displacement for folks who were thriving in that industry. So we'll see it happen again. And because we're in 2025, we know that there are better solutions where we can make that blow soft. We think that we can work with unions and labor organizations to think about what jobs we can push the state to create so that we can minimize that impact.
Yeah, it also seems like there's a distinction worth making between like jobs, any jobs, and good jobs or jobs that solve a good. I can't imagine a lot of prison guards are getting home at the end of their shift saying, I just had a wonderful day at work.
100%. You know, that's what we find when we're looking at studies, because we have had to think about the impact on people who work in prisons, right? They're doing time just as well as folks, or not just as well, but they are doing time like folks who have to remain in the prison. And we realize that folks who work in prisons, guards, have one of the highest suicide rates out of careers in the state of California and really all over the country, because it is a horrible place. It's a horrible culture. And we understand that the best way to, rescue folks from the fate of prisons is to release folks, shut them down, and figure out new ways to, administer public safety that doesn't rely on cages. It's really bad for everybody involved.
So California's faced pressure on two fronts in terms of how it runs its prison system. There's a series of lawsuits over overcrowding, inability to provide adequate medical care to California's incarcerated population. At the same time, there's been this kind of budget pressure as the prison population, incarcerated population shrinks to close facilities. Reducing overcrowding and closing facilities would seem to work in opposite directions on the crowding issue, at least. How do you thread that needle?
Well, you know what? I think that to think about that, we have to first understand that right now we have at least, between 10 and 15,000 empty beds across the remaining 32 prisons, right? And so there it's already excess capacity. CDCR changed the way that it looks at excess capacity to say, well, instead of just considering the number of beds that we may need based on, the way that crime and intake is in courts and through the courts processes, we have to consider the space that's needed for rehabilitation. So they made that shift in recent years in order to kind of maintain this excess capacity, but it's not truly needed. We realize that CDCR actually doesn't do a great job at rehabilitation. Incarcerated folks have built their own systems for rehabilitation in partnership with community-based organizations that give them way better opportunities for positive programming, and they don't need excess space to do that. And so I think that we have to consider there's already lots of space, and giving that up in the way that Governor Newsom closed yards and housing units, if we actually just, instead of closing yards and housing units, put that into closing more prisons, we'd still have excess capacity. Even the legislative analyst office says we can close 5 prisons now. And they would encourage the state to do that, to save billions of dollars, to be able to shift into other resources. So I think in these hard budget times, that's the way we have to approach it.
Wait, the LAO says California can close 5 more prisons? The state's in a budget crisis. Like, why aren't they already closed? What's stopping
that's the same questions we have. We're like, this is the smartest solution that we see in this budget crisis, as we've got, childcare programs closing, educational programs closing, schools closing, healthcare opportunities are diminishing. And so in the midst of this crisis, the answer is let's save billions by closing prisons with this excess capacity that we really don't need. And the state, honestly, in the state budget, it says, hey, we're trending on a declining prison population. We may see a little bit of a spike because of Prop 36, which is a whole different mess, but the state still predicts that we're on a constant decline in that prison population, which to us screams, the LAO's right, let's close more prisons.
One of the other changes in recent years was a program called Realignment, which moved responsibility for some incarcerated people from the state to counties, moved some people from state prisons to county jails, even though they're serving time on state charges. In your estimation, has that been an improvement or worse?
I think from the standpoint of the population, the state prison population declining, it was helpful. It kickstarted, I think, this kind of excess capacity that we've reached now. But I also think in terms of the people, right, who have to experience these carceral facilities at the county level now, folks are left in county, and county jails were never meant to, even prisons are no better, but county jails definitely aren't meant to house people for long term. There's not enough outside recreation. There's not enough space for folks to get air. There's not enough space, period, for folks to live. So we're seeing that the impact on county jails is actually, it's terrible. It's hurting the folks. It's even hurting the counties. We've seen jail projects, jail construction and jail expansion projects pop up all over the state of California because of that realignment. So, we think that The solution isn't to shift responsibility from the state to the county to cage folks. The solution is to actually figure out how to stop caging folks, right? Like, what do folks need so that we don't have all this overcrowding, so that we're not relying on county jails to be mental health providers, right? So I think realignment was helpful in shifting California to think differently, but it's not the real solution. The real solution is to release folks and build up better systems.
It's also, I mean, increased the power and the budgets of a lot of local sheriffs who are often the most reactionary elected officials in the places where they operate. You know, for a long time here in Alameda County, the sheriff was the only Republican office holder.
It definitely increases their budgets and their power, their scope. And what we also saw is that they started to, along with sheriff's departments and probation departments, started to kind of co-opt our movement and the ideas that we have for public safety. And they started to claim budget dollars to do stuff like re-entry, which is insane because we can't have the same folks working in the carceral space be the folks assisting folks with entering society, right? I mean, but that's what we've seen, and all because of these shifts to put more responsibility on local carceral entities.
So, Amber Rose Howard, now that this rehabilitation facility in Norco is closing, what are you targeting next?
We are continuing on our campaign. We're really pushing the state. We started in 2020, the People's Plan for Prison Closure, and this campaign to push the state to close 10 prisons by 2025. So within 5 years, we're halfway there right now. So we're still going to be pushing for the rest of this year for the governor to choose to do the smart thing, the responsible thing, and announce more prisons for closure. Even though this kind of prison closure announcement happened, very close to the budget cycle, the governor can announce more prisons to close at any time, right? So we're still going to be pushing for that to happen. But I'd like to say specifically about this closure at CRC in Norco. We want to make sure we're urging the state to make sure that CDCR facilitates smooth transfers for incarcerated people. Sometimes transfers can be violent. We want to make sure that folks are insured to continue their access to the credit earning that they've been experiencing at CRC, education opportunities. We want to make sure that.
Credit earning meaning credit towards parole or probation.
Exactly. Or time off, right? When you earn credits, it takes some time off of your sentence. Exactly. And so, and you know what? CRC had been sort of the model for rehabilitation in the same way that, the governor's, sort of focus on transforming San Quentin. So this is a prison that had quite a few resources, but the reality of it is that people have been suffering there for far too long, right? And so we want to make sure that whatever folks can hold on to in their experience there that was positive, it follows them. So that's specifically for CRC, what we're thinking about, and really truly focusing on those repurposing opportunities. We're going after the administration and the legislature to really beef up and to strengthen up and say, let's get this $150 million in annual savings and put it into, economic development initiatives. Let's really build up the infrastructure of communities so that we can stop relying on incarceration.
All right. Amber Rose Howard, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Appreciate you so much. Y'all have a good one out there.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.